Welcome to Pardon My Enthusiasm, a horror podcast. Film, spooks, controversy, death, and crime, where the eerie is discussed. I'm your host, Damaris Montuvar. Today's episode, Polanski, a decorated abuser. I wrote down my opening piece because I knew I would struggle to get the words out. The following episode touches on rape, sexual abuse, the Holocaust, and the continued topic of ethical loss in media. I'm going to do my best at keeping composed, but seeing as I am a sentient being, I anticipate breaks in my voice. Everything I read and all the films I watched in preparation provoked sadness and anger. I really hope that doesn't deter you from listening, because my intent isn't to upset, but instead to educate. This was the episode topic I so much wanted to cover. I considered it for my first and then my second episode, but there was just so much information. I needed more time, and so it becomes my fifth and sixth episode for Pardon My Enthusiasm. I started by rewatching Rosemary's Baby, 1968. A film I greatly enjoy. And then I watched The Pianist, 2002, a film I cannot watch frequently, but I've always had such a great admiration for, something I would often describe as important to experience. I first saw these films in my teens, Rosemary's Baby being a frequent watch, but then I learned about the director, Roman Polanski. First, because of Manson. I am not that original, so I went through a big serial murder killer frenzy in grade school, where I first learned about the Manson family and their 1969 Tate murders. But that was pretty much it, until much, much later, where I was stunned to learn that this decorated man had fled the United States after raping a 13-year-old girl in the early 70s. Why was this not more relevant? Why was he still allowed to create and be awarded? That was the beginning of my questions that led to the ultimate question when it comes to art. Does one judge the art and the creator separately? Let's try and dissect that. Roman Polanski was born August 18, 1933 in Paris, France, to the name Raymond Thierby Liebling. He holds citizenship in both France and Poland. This is a brief look at Polanski, primarily for context, where in next week's episode we will do a deeper dive into his life. Two great sources of sympathy towards Polanski come from the fact that he was in Krakow during World War II, and that his second wife, Sharon Tate, was a victim of the Manson family. He is easily the poster child for rough upbringing that turned into success. In the early 1950s, Polanski began his work in the arts that landed him 8 Academy Awards and so much more through his lifetime. The primary person we will be focusing on is Samantha Gaymer, or originally Samantha Gailey at the time that all this was happening to her. I sat down and read her book, The Girl, A Life in the Shadow of Roman Polanski, 2013, over the course of a few days, and overall, I was relieved it did not describe her assault in a way that would require me to stop too frequently. That was literally all I could think about as I prepared myself to read this book. How graphic will it be? And how well will I take it? I'm fairly experienced in stuff. That actually sounds really sketchy, but I originally am from Los Angeles, and even after we moved beyond that, I've been kind of unfortunate in running into a lot of dead people in my life. Literally just like walking down the street and you're like, oh wow, that's a finger, or other. We don't really need to get into the specifics. But what I'm trying to express is that I don't scare very easily. I'm not uncomfortable very easily. In my research for things, I have seen images of dead people or videos, and in person, I've come across death. But death and sexual violence is very different when it comes to processing. By her accounts, she was going through the usual California living thought of why not try for fame. Originally born Tammy Sue Nye on March 31st, 1963, she didn't have a relationship with her biological father. And so when her mother married Jack Gailey, they changed her name to Samantha Gailey. Moving from York, Pennsylvania, after her mother and Jack split up, she took her girl to California. Her mother, Susan Gailey, an aspiring model and actress, got Samantha headshots and took her to auditions. This is no different than a lot of California moms. I know my mom told me that they had headshots of me as a baby, and I'm like, ah, I don't know, I had a pretty big balding head. All the same, of course, this meant that when she met Roman Polanski at a party, and he mentioned needing young American models, she brought up her young daughter. And I do not take this as malicious. It was a show or pageant mom finding opportunities for their kid. Roman said the piece was to be a comparison between American teens and French teens for Vogue Paris. Vogue Paris, a very appealing opportunity. This, unfortunately, is part of the argument against Samantha and her mother, Susan, that she pimped out her daughter and was now extorting the director. They were slandered through comments stating that they were a mother-daughter hooker combo looking to advance both of their careers. After all, it was Susan who had attended a Hollywood party where her older daughter Kim's boyfriend, director Henry Serra, introduced her to Polanski. From there, Samantha described the day Polanski came to her home for his test photo shoot, where her mother asked to accompany, but was opposed by Polanski, who stated that Samantha having her mother there would make her less likely to perform well, and we wouldn't want that. On the first photo shoot, Polanski requested the 13-year-old Samantha pose topless, to which she complied, but expressed feeling nervous and uncomfortable by it. She mentioned feeling like she shouldn't tell her parents, letting her know it was likely a wrong thing to do, especially out in the middle of a street up on a hill that was visible to anyone passing by. She even brought up a biker and how Roman asked her, oh, is he making you uncomfortable? And of course, she's just downplaying it. Samantha did not tell her mother about this because she felt that as a professional, this should be no problem, even reasoning with herself that other actresses were as young as her when they began doing this type of work, and so a second session was scheduled. She was thinking of Brooke Shields when she was doing this and telling Roman, no, I'm not uncomfortable. For this session, in March 1977, Samantha asked a friend to join her, but Polanski could not give an exact end time, and her friend decided to leave before it even began because she had to be home by 8. Samantha was taken to Polanski's friend, Jack Nicholson's house, where he gave her champagne and half a Quaalude, a central nervous system depressant. Now, this is where it gets a tad graphic. While I will be giving information on the setting and what occurred, I specifically wrote this out for myself to not be too graphic. Skip to 10:29 if you'd like to avoid hearing what happened. Polanski brought Samantha to the hot tub and told her to undress as he took pictures of her drinking the champagne. In interviews, Samantha mentions feeling like that was the end of it. She knew that some sort of danger or something was gonna come, because it made no sense for her to have to be in the hot tub undressed. Samantha wrote in her book that she was drinking it slowly, but no matter how little she ingested, her cup kept being filled with champagne. She feared coming across as inexperienced and childish, so when questioned if she had had sex before, Samantha said yes, that she had had sex twice, when in reality it had been once with her longtime boyfriend. Polanski joined her, and in the book, they showed photos of this event. Samantha began to ask when she would be taken home, but instead is taken to a guest room. There is when Samantha Grimier reports her sexual assault began, where she was orally, vaginally, and anally harassed. Samantha mentions feeling at odds with herself because some of what was happening felt good, but she knew the situation was wrong and continually said no, asking when she could go home. A thing people seem absolutely fixated on is that in interviews and in her book, Samantha mentioned that she was confused by the experience because she thought rape had to be violent. She had had friends in the past who were violently raped, and Polanski was not hurting her. That she likely could have overpowered him or in the least fought him, but she did not, and she was unsure of why she froze. On the way home, Roman Polanski told Samantha it was best she did not tell her parents everything that happened that evening. Once home, Samantha ran to her room, her sister Kim followed, while her mom and stepfather spoke to Roman. He showed them the images from the first shoot, including the topless pictures, leaving her parents stunned. Polanski left, and they went to check on Samantha, and that is when they were slowly informed of what had occurred. The lawyer representing Samantha was Lauren Silver, who was referred to as Larry throughout the book. Larry and Samantha, and Polanski, had the awful luck of having Lawrence, different spelling from Larry, J. Rittenband, a self-serving wannabe star excuse of a judge whose cases were all heavily publicized that called for grand media attention. Appointed to the Los Angeles Supreme Court in 1962, Rittenband was a Republican who saw Los Angeles as a place where, quote, people were more sophisticated than anywhere else in the country, end quote. And those are his words, not mine. And that is coming from someone who is OG from there, although I didn't leave very young. He often made statements that a lot of his judicial decisions were swayed by public opinion on the topic. Media attention was something he craved, being exactly why he appointed himself to this case. Rittenband was out for blood, not caring if Samantha's name was exposed or what Roman deserved. His duty was to the public, not the justice system. 2 weeks after the assault, Samantha turned 14, and she feared what would happen if people knew it was her that all the hubbub was about. People were really divided. Team Roman, the man who has suffered enough, or Team Samantha, although they usually use titles like sexually harassed girl, raped girl, seeing as no one knew her name, who was taken advantage of by a man with fame. Samantha's underwear was tested, and while they found semen, they did not find sperm, meaning they could not test it against Polanski's. Semen is essentially the cushy gel, that's just kind of how I'm going to put it, and sperm is the actual, you know, DNA portion of it. Hoping to avoid a lengthy trial that would expose Samantha's identity, Larry fought for a plea bargain that the family was comfortable with, where Roman admitted guilt to unlawful sexual intercourse with a minor instead of the heavier charges he was originally being arrested for. The charges were rape by use of drugs, perversion, sodomy, lewd and lascivious act upon a child under 14, and furnishing a controlled substance to a minor. This plea was for the purpose of protecting Samantha's identity through and through. They weren't looking to be lenient on Polanski necessarily, but the important person in this entire situation was Samantha. And the fact that her identity was being threatened, that her livelihood, her future, that's just unacceptable. They were not seeking punishment exactly, but justice and a clearing of their undisclosed name that would happen by Roman's guilty plea. Rittenband insisted Polanski get a psychiatric evaluation in a state prison for 90 days, to be done essentially at any point, since he was in the middle of shooting in film. He ended up at Chino State Prison December 19th, 1977, and stayed for 42 days. Alvin E. Davis gave his psychological report, stating that the defendant is not mentally ill or disordered, not a sexual deviant, that he possessed superior intelligence, sound judgment, and strong moral and ethical values, that this case was an isolated incident, likely induced by the mother's leniency and the victim being mature and provocative. In my notes, I literally wrote all caps, yuck, gag, die. Because really. It was expected that Polanski would be given probation, but the LA Deputy District Attorney, David Wells, showed Rittenbanny's supposed photo of Polanski at that year's Oktoberfest, huddling around underage girls, and then decided he needed to crack down. And don't get me wrong, it's totally wild to me that he was allowed to travel and work abroad while he was in the middle of a rape case. Like, a rape case. Polanski was allowed to just travel. You would never see that happening to someone who was not famous or in the least rich, and low-key, who wasn't white. But you have to look at Wells, who was not an attorney on record for this case. Instead, he was for the state of California, so still kind of on the case, but he should not have been this personally involved. His communications with Rittenband were one-on-one and wholly unethical. By then, Rittenband had essentially pulled the terms of the offer and left Polanski with an IOU for information on what he owed. Fearing jail and deportation, Polanski left the United States, fleeing February 1st, 1978 to London, only staying a day even though he had a home there, where he then left for France since he was a citizen and France doesn't normally extradite their citizens. I have a lot of conflicting feelings on why I don't blame Polanski for leaving. While I would never, ever, ever, ever have been in that position. This is why I hate what ifs. My partner's always like, what if this? And I'm like, I wouldn't have been dumb enough to do it. I don't know what to tell you. I just would not have been in that position. But if my trial was seemingly just this big paparazzi event with a judge that just did not care about anything but just attention on him, I understand fleeing. I understand leaving because you know you're not going to get a fair trial. But then I think of all the people that are like, you know, why aren't you just talking to the police, just doing it if you have nothing to hide? And it's like, because life is not fair that way. And while yes, Roman Polanski is a white guy and statistically speaking, things would go more his way. They already are. Hello. He was allowed to keep working abroad. It's still nerve-wracking. Jail time, deportation. He was struggling a bit for money at the time, although very likely because of his drug addictions. But all the same, I get feeling cornered and running. But I still want to kick him a little, you know? In the years after, while they tried working out Polanski's return to the US, Larry went to Paris, representing Samantha, and ran into Roman at a cafe. The absolutely disgusting conversation allegedly went as follows. Roman: Larry, come over. If you had seen her naked, she was so beautiful, you would have wanted to blank her too. And Polanski had apparently never denied saying this when confronted. I'm not one to bleep things, but I straight up just couldn't. Even typing it out for my notes, I wrote blank. It made me feel gross. We arrive at 1988. Samantha began a lawsuit for a six-figure sum meant to be retribution for the assault and general emotional turmoil he had put her through. Polanski went ages avoiding payment, and it's especially notable since it took 5 years for the lawsuit to be settled in the first place. Him avoiding paying her meant that she had to report it, and then it would all be public knowledge. So, In the late 1990s, I believe it was sometime in 97, and that's when Samantha revealed her identity and told her truth. In 2013, Samantha began to speak out more, and she stated a few important things. She has an odd sympathy for him because they are perpetually tangled in this, primarily because he fled and there's an endless pursuit for him, which is why she wants him to be allowed back, but she believes Polanski should be allowed back without fear of immediate imprisonment. That way they can sort out any legal issues. She's gone as far as having her attorney try to appeal the whole thing. Just different angles, different approaches, but absolutely no dice. She advocates for respecting the humiliation that comes with media exposure of your trauma. And that's why she's so big on, like, bro, you can't just, like, expose their name. There were rules established that if you were the criminal and a minor, they wouldn't release your name, or your identity, I mean, so that you weren't just labeled with that for the rest of your life. But it wasn't the same for victims. They had to, like, make weird adjustments for it. Larry was literally like, wow, written banned. What are they gonna think about you if you let this poor girl just, you know, be slandered on? You're just gonna wave. How will the media look at you? And that's literally what saved her butt. Something that is always kind of weird for me is that Polanski emailed Samantha after the Marina Zenovich documentary on the trial. The documentary Polanski Wanted and Desired is considered a good analysis of what really happened, by Samantha at least. She cooperated through the making and even attended the premiere. I'm sorry, I need some tea. The note said, "Dear Samantha, I watched Marina Zenovich's documentary for the second time, and I thought I should write you this note. I want you to know how sorry I am for having affected your life. Watching you in the film, I was impressed by your integrity and your intelligence. And you were right, they should give your mother a break. The fault was mine, not your mother's. I hope the pressure of the media has alleviated and that your family brings you much happiness. Best wishes, Roman Polanski." I have so many opinions about this. Just, I understand the power of an apology. That's something that's, it's a reoccurring topic for people who have experienced assault in one way or another. I know for me, it probably do something or another, but it's just something about this letter is kind of condescending for me. I don't know why he's like, "I'm so impressed by you." Like, bitch, I don't give a flying fuck what you think about me. Like, I don't know. And it's one of those, like, what? So I never had integrity and intelligence before just because I was a kid that you took advantage of? And maybe I'm just approaching this very hostile. And I know that Samantha has given an endless amount of interviews stating that she's forgiven him, not for his sake, but for hers, and all kinds of fluffy things of that nature. And maybe that's why she doesn't view it that way. But I'm just kind of like, who are you to think that you're like, wow, I watched this movie twice and I have to talk to you after, like, fucking for a million years later? But again, I'm fixated on, like, wow, so impressed that you actually can thank. Like, what are you trying to tell me? What are you trying to say? At most, I would, as Samantha, I would super, super appreciate the fact that he was like, your poor mom, like, that fucking sucks for her. Because yes, bitch, it fucking sucks. And thanks for, you know, finally saying something, I guess. The media alleviation. Brother, if you just, like, face the music, we'd be good. It'd be done. It'd be over. We'd be fine. Of course my family brings me happiness. Fuck off, man. Just fuck off with your best wishes. But, well, I feel a little bad and my heart rate's up. Samantha. Oh, we had to cool down there. Samantha began working on her book as a reaction to the September 26, 2009 arrest of Roman Polanski from the Zurich airport when he was on his way to the Zurich Film Festival, where he was receiving the Lifetime Achievements Award. The US knew he was going, and they had a solid extradition agreement with Switzerland, so they requested that he be extradited to the United States on the 22nd of September, exactly 4 days before he arrived. This was a holy mess of events. He was on house arrest until July 12, 2010, 9 months, which is much longer than he ever served for his crime. During his house arrest, France was on edge because they so loved Polanski and felt the accusations against him were overblown, overdone, and very likely stretched to the extent that just is the bullshit of America. And both Poland and France were pleading for his release, seeing as he was a citizen of both those nations. He's their international success. And it didn't help that Polanski released an open letter where he discussed how unfair and dirty his original, I guess it wasn't a trial, but just the whole situation was. By the looks of it, he's not wrong. Obviously, he was a bonkers man, that written band, but it still feels weird anytime I agree with Polanski. But really, the amount of repugnant comments made involving this case is unheard of. For instance, in 2009, while his house arrest was occurring, Jonesy Shore, co-founder of Women Overseas for Equality, defended Polanski with this statement. The 13-year-old model seduced by Polanski had been thrust onto him by her mother, who wanted her in the movies. The girl was just a few weeks short of her 14th birthday, which was the age of consent in California. It's probably 13 by now. Polanski was demonized by the press, convicted, and managed to flee, fearing a heavy sentence. I met Polanski shortly after he fled America, and her friend thought he would be meeting the devil incarnate, but was utterly charmed by Roman's sobriety and intelligence. Excuse me, the fucking what? Not only is everything she said just gross, but it's wrong. Bad people don't always behave badly. It's how they get you. I'm definitely more scared of a real clean-cut brother coming at me than someone with tattered clothes, unless it looks like it's Kanye's line of clothes, because then I have no idea what's happening. And the age of consent in Cali has been 18 for a long-ass time, including in the 70s. Oh, this episode really be the episode where Damaris yells a lot, but another came from Gore Vidal, an American writer. When asked about Polanski, he said, I don't really give a fuck. Look, am I going to sit and weep every time a young hooker feels as though she's been taken advantage of? Literally gonna scream. As I was writing this, I was just like, rah, 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 and my cat did not appreciate it, but just like, how is this real life? I just like, Moving on to alleged other victims. Charlotte Lewis described the classic and absolutely awful casting couch scenario where Polanski forced himself on her when she was 16 in 1983, when she was auditioning, presumably for a role in Pirates in 1986. She is present in that movie, and in an earlier interview, Lewis explained having a short-lived, roughly six-month relationship with Polanski when she was 17. The News of the World in 1999, she was quoted as saying, I knew Roman had done something bad in the United States, but I wanted to be his mistress. Take what you want from that. It's kind of all over the place, but something brought up in Samantha's book is that 16 is not legally underaged in Paris, which completely goes around the point and comes across a tad vindictive, since such a large part of her book is pointing out all those who thought she was old enough to know better. even calling out Jonesy Shore's comments that we discussed just a short while ago about 14 being the legal age of consent at the time. And although wrong, this is a consistent point of topic, that Samantha was young and it was abuse regardless. That would include any claims made by Lewis, even if she decided to change her mind after. She doesn't go too far into it, but she really rips into people who made vulgar comments about her, you know, especially in that part with Shore. She has like a thicky paragraph after where she's just like, "What a feminist! How dare you?" And brother, I'm here. Let's fucking yell together. But you can't do that and then be like, well, 16 is like so legal to do it. And well, there are plenty of people who were forced into marrying their rapist, who felt they had to stay with their rapist, so on and so forth. It's not to say she didn't find some weird way of coping with it, but it's not unheard of that you don't recognize your abuse until you're much older. She brings up the fact that Lewis was in Playboy. She's like, oh, actress and Playboy model. And it boiled my blood. You can't just tear a woman down for being on Playboy. It's fine. It's a job, man. But next we have Edith Volkhut, whose story is also very familiar. Volkhut came forward in 2010 that Polanski drugged and raped her at Jack Nicholson's home in 1974, where he brutally raped her when she was 21 years old. This parallels Samantha's experience. She said she knew they were likely going to have sex, but it quickly turned into an aggressive situation with her being handcuffed and sodomized. Both being a hard no for Edith, quote, "I did not expect to be sodomized." Other accusations have come out in the past 5 years, but have less available information, and they are Renee Langer, who told the Swiss police she was raped by Polanski in 1972 when she was age 15 in a town called Gstaad. Yeah, that sounds okay. Following is French actress Valentina Monnier, who said she too was raped by Polanski in the same town, but in 1975 when she was 18. It's also very important to note that in 1989, a little over 10 years since he fled the United States for raping a child, Polanski married French actress Emmanuelle Singer, born June 22nd, 1966, making her 33 years younger than Polanski. My brain kind of gets stuck knowing that she was only 3 years old when Roman's second wife, Sharon Tate, was murdered, and just about to be 11 when he raped Samantha. It's reported that Emmanuel and him started dating when she was about 18 years old. The pair have two children, daughter Morgan and son Elvis. Emmanuel is a huge advocate for her husband, even declining to attend the Academy Awards after Roman Polanski had his membership completely expelled to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences in 2018. This whole I just have no idea. I was trying to get my hands on Polanski's memoir, but I want to read it, and then I also don't want to have to pay to read it because I'm like, no, I can't give you money. I am currently reading The Pianist, and it's rough, man, but I don't, just from this information, I mean, I know a lot more, I'm sure you know a lot more, but I just don't know how to feel, man. I don't know what to think. I don't know what's happening. I'm just mad. Nothing makes sense. No justice is happening, and it's both of their fault, but I also don't want to place blame. Samantha insists that, you know, she's over it and you're never going to recover. And she kind of unfortunately eludes this like holier than thou persona whenever she talks about her soul. It's just like, oh, well, you know, I don't have to sit on it. And it's like, yeah, bro, definitely. But you're kind of obviously still sitting on it if it's still encompassing so much of your life, which is understandable. But then don't like lie to me and tell me that I shouldn't feel mad. I mean, even in the 90s, she was mad enough to like be like, bro, give me my money, you know, and bring it back up. And it's just like, it's okay to be hurt. It's okay to be mad. It's okay to just be like, the fuck is with this situation? I don't know, man. I don't know. Is she taking the higher route? Is she just stronger than everyone or everyone I can think of off the top of my head? Or is she kind of delusional? A lot of people say that she has survivor's guilt, and it definitely kind of looks like it. Although she does talk about it a lot in her book. She's like, I don't have that. It's not me. And that was kind of condescending of me to make that voice. It's reactionary, I suppose. But yes, I do think she has some form of survivor's guilt. A good chunk of her book was just talking about how she flipped out after and how she started doing drugs. She got pregnant at 18. And I mean, I hate to break it to you, Samantha, but it sounds like pain. It sounds like you're not sure. That's why you bring up your friend who was brutally raped, because you weren't correctly raped for the time and for what you knew. People kept making comments to her that, well, she wasn't hurt. You know, nothing was torn. There was no bleeding. Is it really that big of a deal? Very reminiscent of the Brock Turner bullshit of, you know, getting jail time for 20 years of rock treatment. I feel bad. I feel bad for feeling frustrated. I feel bad for her. I feel not bad for her. I just feel confused. And while I respect her wishes to just like keep some sort of weird peace between herself and him and the other people and whatnot, I can't help but feel like she pushes too much. It's almost too, you know, it's good, brother. Like, I forgive him. Like, you Google her and you get consistently like, Samantha forgave Polanski. Why can't America? And it's like, bro, because we don't like when kids are assaulted. America has a lot of issues, bro. A lot. We have so much racist shit. Not that it's not present else in the world. I live in Germany right now, and I have experienced some weird shit living here and being a brown people. I mean, I'm just a little Hispanic girl, but all the same. But in America, it's just like, it's different. We've got these, our social shit is just for a high country. You know, we're supposedly quite rich, quite civilized, you know, we're a developed country. We lack a lot of essentials that other countries do. And while I don't want to directly point fingers and yell about what's going to work and what's not, because it's hard to decide that, it's not hard to see all these things for those countries and then see our downfalls. But I literally went away from my point that we have all this shit. We have so many problems. I don't want to move back. I'm actually looking at trying to move to Korea or Japan. But the one thing I feel like I can find everywhere is this like unilateral understanding that we do not accept hurting children. I mean, it's like, it's prison code, you know? It's like, did you rape a kid? We're gonna beat the shit out of you. Oh, did you die? Oh, I'm sorry. You know, like, let me tell you about how I don't lose sleep about it, which is also something I feel very strange about. Like, where's that line of being happy that someone died, you know? But now I'm getting too wound it up. Oh my gosh, I need more tea. Back to what's at hand, what do you think? I don't know entirely what I think. I have feelings of what I think, but what did you think? This is where we end today and leave the rest for the next episode. Next week, we take a much deeper look at Polanski, including his childhood, his films, and the documentary Wanted and Desired. I think it's going to be a lot harder than this week. when I wrote that initial monologue about how I felt like I was going to really choke up, it was while I was watching The Pianist, and I had just watched Rosemary's Baby the day before. Literally 5 minutes in, I'm already crying, but I won't get into it too much. I wasn't sure if it was going to be two parts. I wasn't sure how much I'd have to say, which I should have known it'd be a lot, but it's not going to be entirely comfortable. This was uncomfortable, but that's when you have to really ask yourself that question of the cultural divide. You know, people are like, well, there's a cultural difference, and it's just like, it's hard. I'm not going to branch too much into it. We'll talk about it next week. And while we talk about Polanski, we will be also talking about the media side of this. Not just the media during the trial and the aftermath over the past 30 then some years or something. It's been more than that. Oh God, let's not talk about it. But we'll be looking at some of his work. I primarily will be focusing on Rosemary's Baby and The Pianist because I know them so well, and I should be done with The Pianist book, and we can also do a comparison on that. But get ready, because it's gonna be a hoot and a half, y'all. As always, thank you very much for listening, and if you are ever so inclined, please follow me on Instagram at pardonmyenthusiasm.podcast, Facebook at pardonmyenthusiasm.podcast, and Twitter at pardonmepod.